You are listening to A Window on the Past on West Limerick 102 FM.
We stopped last week as I think the shooting of Michael Ryan at a brick up near Kilcommon.
Right? Yes.
Now, we overlooked one, I think, right? there was a shooting of a man called Michael O'Shea near Granada, right?
Yes.
Now, that happened on the 10th of May, 1921. And what had happened was that a British spy had been picked up by right. the Granada company. Michael O'Shea was the company captain. And dare I say, this man was tried by a court-martial, and he was being taken to a place of execution. Now, what would appear to happen, I think anyhow, is that information filtered back to the machine gun corps that were in Charleville.
Okay. Right?
And they knew what was going down. And they, dare I say it, they ambushed the execution party.
Yes.
Near Granada. And O'Shea was killed.
Right.
Now, another man, Benson, was seriously wounded. I had contact with Benson's nephew.
Yes.
Just some years ago. The family are still around, you know. But it left a kind of a sour taste, because there had to be a suspicion that someone spilled the beans, because how did they...
Well, it's all so very coincidental, isn't it?
It's much too coincidental, you know, dare I say it. And as I say, O'Shea got killed. Now, I think the spy's name was Ryan, but I won't say that for absolute. But he escaped.
Yes.
You know, now, as I say, the apparently they had been holding him locally in a farm place and court-martialed him. But I think word leaked out to the public house.
You see.
Men with alcohol in can loosen the tongue.
That's it, and loose lips sink ships.
Yes. Sinking ships is right. Anyhow, as I said, that was the story of Michael O'Shea.
Yes.
There is a photograph of Michael O'Shea in a hurling team, with Granada hurling team. They won a junior championship. And Michael O'Shea was one of the players on the team, and he's listed in he's in the photograph. Anyhow, moving on, we'll say the next man we come across is a Thomas Bridges. Now, Thomas Bridges was an RIC man serving in Drumcullagh.
Right. Oh,
this was a very complex ambush. The IRA moved into Drumcullagh on the day of the fair, and they took over a house. Now, they probably knew what was going down. The British Army held checkpoints going into Drumcullagh.
Yes.
Searching people. But there I say it, the bird had already flown.
Right.
The IRA were in situ. Sometime during the day, as I said, there had been a fair on, and sometime during the day, the British soldiers moved away.
Yes.
And a patrol, the IRA were waiting for the patrol, an RIC patrol that used to patrol the town of Drumcullagh. And sure enough, they emerged from the barracks, and they went up to the town on patrol. And they come into the ambush position. Now, I have a feeling that shots were fired prematurely, okay, and that not all the patrol were in the ambush position.
Right, so it was just a case of somebody being a bit trigger-happy and just... This has happened
time out of number. Yeah. Now, whilst it's very easy to be critical, you have to remember most of the fellows involved in those actions, they're doing it for the first time.
That's it, you see. These are amateurs against professionals. And, you know, there is that element, I'm sure, when you have prepared and you are waiting and you catch your first glimpse and you shoot.
Yeah.
Do you know?
And now, the attack in Drumcullagh, right, on Saturday the 14th of May 1921 was unusual. It was driven by the 1st Southern Division. Now, West Limerick Brigade was part of the 1st Southern Division.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they reorganised the IRA in the summer of 1921 and they created divisions.
Yes.
Much bigger organisations. And there was all of County Cork, all of County Kerry, West Limerick were in the 1st Southern Division. They were far the biggest of the divisions, right? Now, Liam Lynch, a Limerick man from the parish of Kilbeheny, was the OC of the 1st Southern Division.
Right.
And as I say, Lynch was an extremely able fellow, an extremely brave, and I would also say a very honourable man.
Yes.
And Lynch decided to have a whole series of actions on a specific date.
Right.
So that the British would now know that they were up against a serious...
Yes.
And he chose the Saturday the 14th of May for this coordinated series of attacks.
Yes.
Now, there were a lot of actions... There were a lot of actions planned that didn't happen. But the one in Drumcullagh, which was the one for the West Limerick action, that happened.
Yes.
Now, as I said, it would have been more successful if someone hadn't fired prematurely. But an RIC man by the name of Thomas Bridges from Roscommon, he was shot dead.
So
Bridges was a young man. Like, I've heard him described as a black and tan. He doesn't fit the role of a black and tan. You know, as I said, that he wasn't recruited in England.
Yeah, so therefore he was...
He had been in the British Army, I think, all right.
But he wasn't recruited in England for this purpose, so he was RIC.
That defines the black and tan.
And that's why there's such a grey area then, you see, is...
Well, there isn't.
I mean, to glorify and commemorate one lot is impossible without commemorating all of them.
Yeah, but see, what happens is people talk of black and tans. Do they really know
what black and tans were? About? Yes.
Yeah.
Because, you have the three groups. You've got the RIC, you've got the auxiliaries, and you've got the black and tans. And they're three strands within...
Well, even that it could be argued, black and tans don't exist as such. They're not a separate force.
They're a supplementary.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah, they're a supplementary force. Supplementary force.
Yeah, no, they're actually members of the RIC.
Yes.
The distinction I would put was the members of the RIC
that were recruited in England.
Recruited in England.
Yes.
Now, they may or may not have been in the British Army. Most likely they were in the British Army, but not necessarily.
But they were all recruited in England. That's the defining... Yeah.
That's the defining criteria.
Criteria.
Now, as I say, they are members of the RIC. Some people speak of the black and tans as if they were a separate force.
They're not.
As I say,
commemorating the RIC is commemorating them as well.
Yes. Yes, our friendship value, that's what I
and
would
that's,
take.
And that's why it's exception. Unconscionable.
Yeah.
You have many honourable men, but you have many dishonourable ones as well. You can't...
Well, you have. To be fair about the black and tans, or what are called black and tans, most of them, you know, they're young fellas at their school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally straight into the trenches of
Into
France.
The trenches as cannon fodder. Yep. And as we said before, the misfortune of their lives is that they managed to survive. And they went back into a country that had no infrastructure to care for them.
Well, listen, once they were...
They were dispensable. They weren't expected to survive. They weren't expected to return.
And they didn't care whether they did or they didn't. I tell you, the parallel I see is the way Mr. Putin is recruiting people in Russia and sending them off to the Ukraine.
Well, look, at here's the thing. War is war.
Yeah.
And it's not nice.
It's not nice.
You know?
People can say what they like. Anyhow, as I say, our friend Bridges was a 21-year-old farmer's son from County Roscommon.
County Roscommon.
He had been in the British Army, and as I say, he was the fatality when the IRA opened fire in Drumcolour. Now, I can gather, reading stuff on it, they did not have the patrol, RIC patrol, were not fully in the ambush position when someone opened fire. As I said, Bridges was killed, and there was the sergeant, I can't think of his name, he was wounded.
But like, again, now, as we say, we're talking about split-second decisions, split-second decisions that change lives and end lives.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have more than one chance to start an ambush. You know?
And you see, like, it's very easy to be critical, sit here 100 years later and be critical, but as I say, most of those fellows that took part in that ambush, they were probably taking part in the post-action.
Yeah, they, you know, like when we spoke about Kevin Barry, probably one of the first times they've ever held a firearm.
He was, well, he might have held a firearm in training or practice. But
not with intent.
Not in action.
Yeah, not with intent.
Now,
there's a difference.
That was on, as I say, that was on the... what was it, the 14th, I think it was the 14th of May. See, let me check now, is it? I think it was the 14th of May, I think, right? Now, the same day, on the 14th of May, 1921, Harry Biggs was a district inspector in Newport.
Yes.
Now, Biggs is unusual in that he was up from the ranks. He's a captain in the British Army, but he's been promoted from the ranks.
Right.
He's also a district inspector of Newport. And he's totally ruthless. You know, he's from Aldershot, actually, a military town. His father was a sergeant in the British Army.
Yes.
And Briggs went into the army as initially as a kind of a private soldier, and he was promoted. Now, you see, in 1918, Britain was running out of young officer material.
Yes.
The public schools had run out of supply.
Right.
And they then started promoting fellows from the ranks. Now, two things about these fellows that were promoted from ranks. Huge number of them ended up, or a huge number of the auxiliaries that were in Ireland, fitted into that category. They had been in the army as ordinary soldiers. They entered as ordinary soldiers.
Yes.
They were the bravest and toughest. And when Britain was running out of cannon fodder or officer cannon fodder, these boys got promoted in their place.
Of course.
No. Dare I say it, the irony and the tragedy about these lads is that whilst they might suffice at a certain point of time, there's no future for them in the long term as an officer. So a lot of them end up in Ireland as auxiliaries.
Yeah.
No. As I said, two things about it. There's no future for them. And the second thing is, they are the toughest.
They are the toughest. And as far as the British are concerned, they're disposable.
Expendable. Yeah. They're expendable. Yeah.
Yeah.
The word that I use is expendable. Anyhow, Harry Biggs, they had him in their sights for a while.
Mm-hmm.
He had been involved in the There was a British Sergeant Cripps, who was in Castleconnell the day that Dennis O'Donovan and the Black Catan and the Auxiliary were killed. And Sergeant Cripps had witnessed what happened. Now, the thing about it was that Sergeant Cripps had a brother who was a lord in the British House of Lords.
Yes.
So he sent the story, and he sent some evidence. He sent dumb bullets
that were
picked up in O'Donovan's hotel in Castleconnell.
Yes.
He sent them to his brother, and they were displayed
on the
House of Lords. Now, as I say, I can't think the judges or the lords' names, but it doesn't matter. He was, he was one of their own.
Yes.
And when he's showing the evidence on the House of Lords,
it has an impact.
Very difficult for the British government to answer it.
Yeah. That has an impact, doesn't it?
Now, as I say, the thing is that Biggs decided to take him out.
Yes.
But fortunately for Paramount, it was actually Lord Paramount. So fortunately for Paramount's brother, he had left the country before Biggs had tumbled to where he was. But he had gone looking for him.
Yes.
And the IRA knew what Biggs was at, right?
Yes.
So Biggs, anyhow, he had the hankering after Florence or Winifred Barrington. And they went fishing, or they were going fishing outside Newport. They went to a house for tea,
yes,
outside Newport. And they had been spotted going up the road or going, with Miss Barrington, right?
Yes.
And on the way back, they were ambushed by the IRA. Now, they had no intention, because the Barringtons were very, very well got.
Yeah, I was just saying, that's a very sad story. And the Barringtons, as you say, were very well respected and very well thought of.
They were very well respected, yeah.
And it was, there are many, many sad stories about Winifred's funeral and everything, and the local people's reaction.
As I say, they would have no problem shooting Biggs.
Biggs, yeah.
Dare it be said that he had it coming.
Yeah, but Winifred was unfortunately in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong company.
Yes. No, she was in the front seat with Biggs. And the irony is, when Biggs got out and ran, if she had stayed where she was,
she would have been okay.
The other thing, the car survived.
Yeah.
But you see, she was in trousers or dressed like a man.
Sure.
So when
they shot them both.
Yeah. Or began running. She was shot along with our friend Biggs.
It's a very sad story. Like there are many. A lot of people have written about Winifred Barrington's funeral, and local.
Father Brian Murphy, who died there some time back, he wrote extensively. He studied the whole thing, Father Brian would be very Republican in outlook, but he would also be very fair man.
Yes.
And he had great sympathy for
the Barringtons. Yeah. It's a very sad story.
It is very sad because, as I say, Barrington himself, the father, he was well respected. Now, when she was being taken to the church, on previous occasions, where someone from the Loyalist background was being taken to church after a shooting, the Black and Tans and the military, British military, would compel the closure of houses and shops and that.
Yes,
that didn't happen. That didn't have to happen in Maru. In sympathy with the Barringtons. Absolutely.
Everything closed.
The tolling of the bell was all that was heard. Now, as I say, it was spontaneous.
Yeah, no. I've read Father Murphy's writings about it. And it's very, very, just very sad. Very sad.
It's very sad. You know, that she was buried actually in Maru in the Paddington.
Isn't there? There's a famous inscription. Here lies all that could die of Winifred Barrington. Isn't that it?
No, I haven't seen that, so I'm not going to say. You know, most definitely, most probably, it is correct, right? But as I say, I wouldn't have. I haven't actually studied.
Yeah, just a very touching inscription. You know, all that could die of her was, let's say, her mortal remains, but her memory would live on. You know, it's a nice inscription, but it's just a very sad story.
It is, because Barringtons were very good landlords.
Mm.
And they also were good business people. Like, Barringtons Hospital was a voluntary hospital.
Yes.
It was the poor of Limerick. Let's be straight.
That benefited from Barringtons Hospital.
That benefited from
Yeah.
Long before the monstrosity called the Health Board was set up.
That's it. Long before the HSE and the ensuing problems with that.
Yeah, before they became so bureaucratic that the documents, filling in the documents, was nearly the biggest operation they had.
Oh, look, I'm telling you that I was talking on a different program here a couple of weeks ago about a medical incident, shall we say, and rather than being asked what is wrong with the person or, you know, what help do you need, the first question that was asked was, what is the medical card number?
That's the most important thing.
The story today, rather than the Barringtons Hospital of old, where people came first.
Like, we're dealing with it more and more. We seem to have a shortage of nurses and doctors, but we have no shortage of bureaucrats.
No shortage of pen pushers and no shortage of people, you know, wondering if you can pay rather than wondering if you were alive or dead.
No, it's whether it is in the medical area or where it is. There's no shots of people coming up the system.
That's it.
Now, I worked in work study and that back in the day. I would say that you could get rid of an awful lot of these layers. It's the layers more than anything else.
That's it. And you see, then you'd have more funds and you'd have a more direct line of communication as well. And you'd have what you don't have nowadays, which is accountability.
Well, you see, that's what they don't want. That's what they don't want. Because there's a thing going on at the moment about lifting the ban on bankers' salaries.
Yes.
I have no problem lifting the ban on bankers' salaries, provided bankers are held accountable.
That's it, you see.
And if someone screws up badly enough, I mean, some of the things that banks did over the years, they should be in jail for that.
That's exactly it. Like, I mean, people should get paid for doing a job well, but being accountable for the work that they do.
Yeah, whatever the salary is, if it's $500,000, so be it. But if you pay it $500,000, you better earn it.
You better, and be accountable, and have transparency. Be able to show what you're doing. Yeah.
Anyhow, I think we leave it at that for today.
Have we given out enough?
I don't think we have.
You have been listening to A Window on the Past on West Limerick 102 FM.